WCNC Charlotte. This is Flashpoint, where power and politics collide and the tough questions get asked and answered.
Thanks for joining us here on Flashpoint. I'm Ben Thompson. This morning, lawmakers in Raleigh getting ready for a big transition of power. Just this past week, Roy Cooper gave his farewell address as North Carolina governor. In it, he reflected on his accomplishments and said serving the community will be one of the things he misses the most. Take a listen.
But for the last 8 years, getting to lead the state I love so much has been an extraordinary privilege. Challenging, humbling, and the best job I've ever had. And I have valued every day.
WCNC Charlotte's Jane Monreal had the chance to catch up with the governor and hear firsthand how he felt about his time in office.
North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper has only about a month left in office before Josh Stein is sworn in. So what does he plan on doing this last month? The governor joining us today. Thanks for taking the time, Governor. You've been in office now for 8 years. You have about a month left. What are your plans for this last month?
Well, we're running through the tape, Jane. We know that Western North Carolina desperately needs help. I've been to 15 counties out there, some of them multiple times. We've been up to Washington to visit with the president in the Oval Office and to Capitol Hill, visiting with members of the U.S. Senate and House of both parties. We're working the state legislature. We know that this was the deadliest, most devastating storm in the history of our state, and that it's going to take significant investment, not only to rebuild and recover, but rebuild in such a way that it can withstand future storms. I have a lot of confidence in the people of Western North Carolina, their courage and determination, and how people have all come together to help each other. I believe we can do it, but it's a monumental challenge, and I'm going to keep running through the tape and working on that and getting ready to pass off that mantle to the next governor. We're also continuing to recruit jobs to our state. We're also dealing with the legislature here during their last couple of weeks, and hopefully that we can stop a power grab that they're engaging in and instead try to get resources to Western North Carolina. But it seems to never end, but I know that it will at the end of the year. And I'm just deeply grateful and humbled for the people of North Carolina giving me this opportunity. What a way to get out of bed every day, recognizing you're going to lead the state that you love so much. And I've been deeply appreciative of that opportunity and thank the people of North Carolina for giving it to me.
Governor, in 8 years, what would you say have been your biggest accomplishments?
Well, being in Charlotte on December the 1st of last year, the first day that Medicaid expansion enrollment opened, and handing a brand new health care card to Penny, who was finally getting health insurance that she had needed. We now have health insurance to working North Carolinians. 590,000 of them in the past year have signed up for Medicaid expansion. We thought that it would take 2 years to get that many people, but it shows the critical need of it. So we've been able to make North Carolina healthier. My mission has been to have a North Carolina where people are better educated, healthier, with more money in their pockets, and Medicaid expansion goes a long way toward that. We've also seen a net increase of 640,000 jobs while I have been governor. And remember, when I came into office, we were facing the dark shadow of HB2, the bathroom bill. We had businesses that had agreed to come here canceling entertainment and sporting events, leaving our state. We were able to get that repealed, restore our reputation. We're now the third fastest growing state in the country, and we're a place where people want to be, and I think that's exciting.
Yes, we talk about that all the time, the growth and progress of Charlotte, really North Carolina. So your biggest obstacles then?
Well, we know that in order to continue to grow our economy and put money in people's pockets, we have to have an educated workforce, and support for early childhood education, quality child care, and public schools is critical. And although during the first few years of my term, we worked with the legislature and we made some progress on that, not as much as I wanted, but some progress. We raised teacher pay over the first few years by about 19%. We know that we need to do a lot more for our public schools. And I think the biggest obstacle has been the fierce partisanship that we're seeing increasing in our state and in our country. Partisan gerrymandering has been the greatest problem in getting compromise and consensus that I've seen, because the legislature has drawn so many deep blue districts and deep red districts and so very few purple districts that there is little political incentive. I believe there is moral incentive, but little political incentive for people to try to find consensus and a path forward. That has been tough to overcome. We've been able to do it in many instances, like with Medicaid expansion, like with clean energy legislation, like with economic growth and job recruitment. We've worked hand in glove on that. We just need to do a lot more of it, both in this state and in this country.
How about this milestone, your biggest surprise?
Well, I think a surprise. Well, when you think about how hard it is to make sure that we get people a good education and to make sure that we invest enough money to get it done, and I think that I have been surprised that there hasn't been more groundswell of support to get the legislature to move in that direction. We're making big progress on that because I think people really didn't understand what was happening. For example, I just couldn't believe that the legislature would give private school vouchers to the very wealthiest among us and take that money away from public schools. It's hard to believe that they did that, but they have. So I think that we need to now get people understanding, like they have in other states who've done this private school voucher scheme, that this is something that doesn't really help children get a better education. It wrecks budgets. And I think it's going to be incumbent upon the next governor and the future general assemblies to correct this problem.
We certainly learned about the resilience of Western North Carolina. You alluded to it. What else will you miss about the people of North Carolina?
Well, I'm not going to miss because I'm going to be here.
True.
I've lived here all of my life. And in fact, and I haven't driven a car in 8 years, so I'm looking forward to doing that. I'm not sure my wife really is looking forward to that much. But I think that at least from being governor, missing having the opportunity every day to make a real and substantive difference to move this state forward. And being in this job, I've had an opportunity to do that, and I know I'll miss it. But even though I haven't decided exactly what I'm going to do after this job, I know it will be something where I can keep making a difference, and that's what I care about.
Yeah, I know you'll be with the people of North Carolina. I did miss as the governor. What will you miss about the people? But what other wish would you have been able to accomplish in the time that you have with that time that you have left?
So I once again, I'll come back to our public schools and early childhood education and quality child care. We're going to be facing a crisis here soon if we don't make the investments that we need. Quality child care, for example, is one of the greatest investments we can make. I call it the triple play because it provides children with the early childhood education that they need, that science overwhelmingly says they need. It provides the parent the opportunity to go work and make money for the family, and it provides that business the opportunity to hire that parent. So I want to see the state legislature and Congress, for that matter, invest more in education, early childhood education. I think that's something that's got to be at the top of the list.
You've had many conversations with Josh Stein. Any advice as he moves into his office?
Be persistent. Never, ever give up. During these 8 years, I think we've faced historic challenges, from national disasters to a pandemic. We put North Carolina in a place where we've come out better than most all of the other states post-pandemic, with a strong economy, with a lower death rate from the pandemic. And we're now in a position to really succeed. Also, just never, ever give up. With Medicaid expansion, I started out day one in office being sued by state legislative leaders for trying to expand Medicaid. And then just last year, those same legislative leaders came to the governor's mansion as we signed the Medicaid expansion bill that we asked them to sign. And that's because that we didn't, and the people who knew this was important never, ever gave up. Also, being willing to try to find common ground. Stand up for your principles, stand up for your values, but there are going to be differences of opinion on how we reach goals that we know we need to reach in North Carolina. And being open to finding ways forward with people from the other party, I think that's going to be key to leadership. And I have no doubt in my mind that he can do it. He and I have been known each other for more than 20 years. I hired him, actually, when I was attorney general to lead my consumer protection division. He's done an excellent job, not only as a state legislator, but as an attorney general. He's going to be a great governor. He's going to continue a lot of the progress that we've made, but he's also going to blaze his own trails as well.
So you talked a little bit about still staying involved. What else can you say about your next step going into 25?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that people can do to move the needle forward. We have seen that in our state, where business people have come in and taken government positions for a little while. We've seen volunteer groups and churches make a big difference as they've helped people recover from natural disasters. We've seen businesses grow that have been able to provide great paying jobs for North Carolinians. So there's a lot of ways that you can help. I'm just going to take a month or so to decide how I can best help and continue to add to the woodpile, let's say, to make great things happen in North Carolina, because I love this state so very much and I'm not going anywhere.
All right. Very good. I have a feeling this is not our last conversation with you.
Let's hope not.
North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, appreciate your time and have a great rest of the year.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it.
Ahead on Flashpoint, we discuss the big changes to Uptown's New Year's Eve celebration after last year's violence. Welcome back to Flashpoint. New Year's Eve just around the corner, but this year, Charlotte making a big change to its annual celebration. This morning, we speak to one of the organizers behind the revamped event. Joining us now is Dan Rakowski, Chief Operating Officer over at the Charlotte Knights. Dan, good to see you again. Thanks for coming on.
Good to see you, Ben.
All right, so for the first time, Truist Field hosting the city's official New Year's Eve celebration. Give folks an idea what they can expect.
Well, you're right. It's the first time we've done this. Of course, we've tied it in with Light the Knights, and this is our fifth year. But we sat down with our partners at Center City Partners and said, why don't we just have this New Year's Eve celebration to tie in with Light the Knights? So this will be the first year we're doing it, and very excited about bringing in the new year, but also a little bit of fireworks show to bring in 2025.
Yeah, something you guys have become known for. This is a change I know you've said that has been somewhat years in the making. What made it possible this year?
Well, I think, you know, the success that we've had really over the last 2 years with the Light the Knights Festival, with the skating rink and the tube slide, and us understanding how that business works. You know, our core business is baseball, and COVID put us in this business of not playing baseball to getting into the holiday season and the Christmas festival. And, you know, we did a hockey game last year with the Charlotte Checkers, was tremendously successful. And now we just want to take it one step further with a New Year's Eve celebration.
Safety top of mind for folks. As you know, last year there was a shooting there at Romier Bearden Park. What are some of the measures that you guys are going to be taking to ensure people have a safe and happy New Year's Eve?
Well, certainly we've continued to provide safety within our building. We do this every night when we play baseball. And so that's, we don't see that as anything different. Outside, we've been in lockstep with CMPD and had meetings with them just to cover what is going to transpire. But, you know, we're very comfortable with this. You know, there's New Year's Eve celebrations all over the country and all over the world, and with very little issue. I think last year was an isolated incident with a couple of younger people, and certainly with the curfew that they have for 16 and under. We're confident with the partners at CMPD that we've worked with that we should see no incidents.
New Year's in Uptown went from being free of charge, and now people have to pay to attend. Now, admittedly, Dan, I know you're a businessman. You are not a politician. You are not Center City Partners. Your job is to take money, and I get that. But this is the city's official New Year's celebration. What do you say to folks who say, hey, this used to be free, and now it's not? It doesn't seem fair. What would you say to those folks?
Well, I think, you know, the price is $10 to come in to watch a fireworks show. And then the other part of it is, look, if you don't want to come in, I don't want to recommend going through all those parking lots. But the reality is Vermeer Bearden Park is open. We do Sky Show on July 4th fireworks, and thousands of people watch the show for free. You know, so I think it's the experience when you come in at 10, you're able to walk through the lights, which is incredible. If you want to come in for $25, you come in and ice skate and tube after 10 o'clock. So there are other things of value than just coming in and being able to sit and watch the fireworks show.
How many people are you expecting? Any rough estimate yet?
We don't know. First time doing this. We certainly hope it'll be a good turnout. You know, there's restrictions because of all the lights and the trees and the things that we have for light the nights, but I think 3,000 or 4,000 maybe, but it could be more. You know, we just don't know.
Are you hoping this is going to be the start of something new? Do you see yourself, say, a year from now, planning this same event once again at Truist Field?
Well, we certainly do. You know, this has been, this has been a staple with Light the Nights, and it's here to stay. The success that we've had with this Winter Festival has just been incredible. And why not tie in a fireworks show and have it all in one location? So I see this moving on. You know, the logistics, we have to work through those a little bit, and we have. You know, you've got some street closures, but it's very organized, and we've had a lot of planning to go through with a number of different people. Feel very comfortable with putting off the show.
I'd be remiss. I mean, I call this the winter doldrums once we get into January and February. But if I didn't ask you about the nights, when does the season get started?
Well, we start up right at the end of March. We take on the Atlanta Braves affiliate at the 28th of March. So there's a quick turnaround. We got to tear down our ice rink and a tube slide, get ready for baseball. We've got college baseball mixed in between our night schedule. So not a lot of time to rest, really.
Yeah, March 28th, we'll be here before we know it. All right, Dan Rutkowski. Dan, thanks for coming on. Good to chat with you again.
Thanks, Ben. Good talking with you as well.
All right, happy holidays. Up next on Flashpoint, we continue our buried series as a school district comes forward to say it's testing for coal ash following our investigation. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Another local school planning on testing its soil in response to our buried investigation. Lincoln County Schools confirmed the district is finalizing plans to collect samples at Rock Springs Elementary School. It comes after WCNC Charlotte's Nate Morabito's report revealed coal ash placed at the school decades ago.
We don't know where the ash is buried at Rock Springs. These tests should provide some clarity. A district spokesperson told us Lincoln County Schools is talking with state regulators and other agencies about the kind of testing the school system can rely on to ensure everyone's safety.
It's really upsetting.
In response to our reporting in November, previously unaware parents and a former teacher expressed fear over the discovery and outrage over the initial lack of action by Lincoln County Schools. We recently obtained a message from the principal to concerned parents that reads in part, "There is no coal ash under the school's buildings or playgrounds. State environmental records show there are about 300 tons of coal ash somewhere at this school."
Bring us some results, test it, do some action.
I want the soil tested, and I want to know what my kid is playing on every day.
As we've reported, coal ash contains what a Duke University scientist calls a cocktail of toxic elements, including known carcinogens and elevated radioactivity. Duke Energy told us a small amount of coal ash was used as truck access drive at this school, but most was blended in a cement mixture and permanently encased in the cement. considered a beneficial use by the Environmental Protection Agency that meets benchmarks for the protection of human health. Speaking of the EPA, the agency is in the midst of evaluating the risk at this school and other locations throughout the area. Nate Morabito, WCNC Charlotte.
More Flashpoint after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint, folks. Come interact with us on social media. If there's something you want us to talk about here on Flashpoint, let us know. And as always, remember to listen and subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you get yours. And we'll see you back here next weekend.